Hi, everybody. So this week's portion is Emor, E-M-O-R. And the beginning of the portion, there's a verse that says that we should warn the elders concerning the children. And basically what this is telling us is that you can look at it as parents who need to take responsibility for education for their children, or you can look at it as any project that you have that basically you can't just sit back passively and expect something to happen on its own. It's obviously not going to happen. So anything we do requires effort. And the seed obviously won't grow if we don't invest in it. If we don't invest in something, then the seed won't grow. Now, it talks about two different things regarding children specifically, and we can take it to mean anything, you know, any people in our lives. And it talks about the principle of obviously parenting and knowing how to teach the children the laws of spirituality, the laws of Torah. But it also says, because it's using the expression saying, emol, to say, and it teaches us something. It teaches us that if you're teaching somebody spirituality, if you're teaching children spirituality, or if you're teaching them about, like, say, the laws of Shabbat or the laws of the Torah, and it becomes something that they think is challenging, then they won't want to do it. But if you teach them in a way that they understand that it's something that is part of them, but it can be fun, then they'll be excited to do it. And there's a story that I want to tell you about these two men in the 20th century. So a lot of Jews who moved to America were actually religious Jews, and they kept everything before they got to America. And what happened was, when they started looking for jobs, most of their employers wanted them to work on Shabbat, and they didn't want to do it. A lot of them, you know, succumbed to working on Shabbat, and they didn't have a choice. And then there were those who decided not to. So there's a story about these two men who both of them decided not to work on Shabbat and to keep everything. And one man's children grew up and decided not to keep anything at all. And the other man's children, you know, went in his way and became spiritual and kept everything. And they went to the rabbi of their town, and they, you know, they asked, why is it that, you know, my friend's children did this and my children did that? And so the man said, you know, I talked to your children, and they experienced two different things. So both of them decided to keep Shabbat. But what happened was, one of them would come home every Friday night after he was fired from his job and would start complaining how hard it is to keep Shabbat. And every time I get fired and I have to look for another job, and it's you know, it's heavy and it's too hard. And that's what the children grew up to hear, that we were complaining about not being able to do this. And so they didn't want to keep Shabbat because it became something that was too much. And the other one went home and just enjoyed the Shabbat and enjoyed the time with their family and enjoyed the spirituality. And so his children experienced something completely different. So for us in our lives, and there's a lot of things tonight that I want us to, like, stop and think about, because we can use everything tonight in our lives. So we need to see in our lives where we take something, even in our jobs, and we have people around us all the time. And obviously there are people who work with us. And how do we project on other people? What do people think about how we work? Do they think that it's hard for us? Do they think that we're enjoying it? Do they think that we're complaining all the time? So share, like, how do you see yourselves? What do people think about how you are in your lives? And how would you want to come across? Because this guy was coming across, he wanted to come across as keeping Shabbat and having his children follow him, but what he came across was, it's too hard. It's too hard, and he complained all the time, and in the end, they didn't follow him. So go ahead.
So I want to come across that I'm happy-go-lucky at work, but I think I don't need to say anything. Sometimes people see that I'm, like, overly stressed, and
right.
I don't leave my office for 5 hours, and I'm very quiet. So I think what I really want to be projected is oftentimes the opposite.
Right. So, and also you have to think of who you want to affect. Who do you want to, and also with your spirituality, like, if people think that it's hard, they're not going to do anything. if people think that it's a commitment and it's too hard and it's too much and it's, they won't do it. What do you think?
So I used to be the complainer. I didn't know that that's, you're not supposed to do that.
Really?
I was entertaining people with my drama story.
Really?
Honestly. And then I hit like a major wall in my career, and this was like about a year and a half ago, and I was like, how are these other people getting promoted, and how are they getting all this? And like, I have the top sales numbers, like I have all this going on, but what, at that time I didn't realize it was my
your energy,
attitude, the way I, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was so good that I hit that wall, because that's opened up like a whole nother door for me spiritually to start working on myself. That led me to all of these resources, including, you know, being here with you tonight.
Yeah.
And now I don't do that anymore, but I still struggle sometimes with, you know, like things come up and you're like very irritated and you want to say something and you want to just get it off your chest, but I like try not to, because I know I'm just going to be continuing doing the same thing like what I was doing before. So I'm much better now, but I still struggle with it a little bit internally.
Yeah, I mean, everybody struggles with it internally, and, you know, hopefully you're able to change that energy into something else.
Yeah.
But we don't realize how much we affect people by how we look, what we say, what we do, how we do it, what we don't say. We affect people so much.
Yeah.
Do you want to share anything?
So for me, it's like I work on my own.
Okay.
So the only thing that comes up is how do I impact myself as far as the way that I'm looking at everything, how can I modify it in order to,
right,
you know,
yeah,
decide what to do. After all, it's completely my decision. I don't have to worry about who. I used to work for a company, corporation. I wasn't really concerned as to how they saw me. I was more concerned because I was in sales and as to the results.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was, and it was really funny because I remember there were other people that I was in the same place with. They were like my, the other people worked in that same group in the same kind of alignment, but not at the same accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one guy, John, and he came across as completely in control. And, you know, everything was smooth and everything was great. He never closed any business. He never closed any business. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do what I know how to do. And this is what I know how to do. I know how to put together. People look at logic.
Right.
People look at what's valuable to them. And there's a concept actually in the sales industry, supposedly, called solution selling. So if you work with people and show them what's to their benefit and what's against it, and you're really in over there with mm-hmm. them, then you get their mind share. If
right.
you're just coming up there and you're smearing stuff all over the place, they walk away.
Right.
You know,
yeah, I mean, today, in today's world, we were talking about it today, we were meeting with some people. You know, people used to walk in and if they just wanted you to tell them what to do, and they do it. Today, people want to know why. You know, explain it to me. Show me. I need to learn why. You know, prove it to me. They're not just going to listen. We were talking about it, that people from like 25 to 35, they want to know why. They're not going to listen to anything unless you explain it. So if, you know, if this man came home to his children on a Friday night after he'd been fired and all he was saying was how bad it was, that's what they're going to, you know, that's what they're going to pick up. That's what they're going to internalize. And why would they want to do the same thing as their father and suffer? They didn't want it. So that's the point of why it says to warn the elders concerning the children, because it's telling us that here it's talking about parents, but as parents, we have to take responsibility for our children's education. We can't just sit down and say, okay, they're going to school, it's fine. School can only teach them so much. You know, teachers can only teach them so much, and we don't even know today what the teachers are saying, what they're not saying. To be in a good school is very lucky. And like we went to the Warner Elementary Street School this week or last week. Last week. These children, I have to tell you, I have never, we've done 10 schools at least. These children asked questions like they came out of a TV show. One of the kids asked, where was the setting of the book? Where was the setting of the book? It was so, like, they were asking these questions that they want to know. And they're kindergartners. They want to know. They don't want to just take the book as it is and take it for granted. They want to know. So children, we have to take the responsibility of teaching, even if it's not our own children, of teaching the younger generation of what it could be, what's good about it, and what we can bring positive into the world. Not just say, okay, you went to school, you're educated, you're learning, that's it. No, there's much more. There's much more to life than that. So the effort that we put into it is what's going to grow from it. There's no seeds that are going to grow if we don't put effort into it. And there's another thing is that the word lazir comes, the word Zohar comes from there, and it means shining, right? So by working to educate our children, our own souls will shine because we'll be effectively educating children or the younger generation, and it forces us to lead by example. You know, there's no such thing anymore as do as I say, not as I do. It doesn't work. You have to lead by example because children look. The younger generation looks. And if you're not going to do what you're saying, they're not going to do it. So it's really, really important. And that leads me to another topic in the portion, which is the power of words. So emo means speak. And the power of words, the power of our words is immense, and we don't realize it. And it says, the sages say that evil tongue kills three kinds of people. The one who speak it, the one who hears it, and the one who's being spoken about. Now, the one who hears it and the one who speaks it, we can understand. But why should the person being spoken about be affected? And according to Kabbalah, what happens is, if you speak negatively about someone over and over and over and over, even if it's not in front of them, eventually you're going to draw out all the negative traits of that person. Meaning, even if it's not true, all the negativity that could have been hiding and not come out is going to come out. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you speak negatively about someone, not in front of them, and this keeps on going and keeps on going and keeps on going, eventually that person on a subconscious level is going to manifest all of his negative traits. And it's the same thing with the opposite. If you speak good about someone, eventually they will become good. Even if it's not in front of them, because it's about energy. It's never about that person being there. So, you know, the power of words, what we don't believe that what we say affects people. We don't believe that what we say affects us. I mean, how many times a day are we hard on ourselves and we actually say it out loud to ourselves? How many times a day do we say something, I wish I was this, or I wish I had this, or I wish, and we're not thinking. Or we say something to somebody and we think it's nothing. We think it's only words. Like, I remember when I used to be the director in SFK for children, there's this example that they use for words. There's a sugar bowl and a salt bowl. And we used to tell the kids, take a spoon of salt and put it in the sugar. Okay? And so the kids would do it. And then we would say, try and get all the salt out of the sugar. It's impossible, right? Because the salt and the sugar look alike. So we would say the salt is like negative words, hurtful words. You can't take hurtful words back. You can try and pour more sugar on them, but they never go away. So the power of words for us as adults, we don't think about it. We don't. We just, you know, sometimes it's just diarrhea of the mouth. We just talk and we don't think what we're saying. And it's really important. I want you guys to, like, even today, write down one or two things that happened to you today that you know you shouldn't have said, and you said it. For sure. Write it down to yourselves. Two things that you said today that you know you shouldn't have said. If you can't, two, then one, and then share it with me. You have something?
I mean, somebody said something to me that was...
Okay, but first, that's always easy. That's always easy.
No, it was really bad.
Yes, but that's always easy. It's about us. Yeah, go ahead.
So there's someone on my team, and it's they're a little bit challenging. And I said something on ice. I said, I don't think they're that bright, so I can't give them an assignment.
Even if you think that,
it's not nice.
Yeah. And it's not even about nice. It affects, it,
right.
In the end, that person will not be able to become any better.
Right.
Because, and it's not even about giving them a chance. It's about pulling that out of them.
Right.
The more you say negative about somebody, the more you're pulling it out of them. It's almost like you're creating something that pulls all the negativity out of that person to become negative. Think about it. It's scary.
I didn't say anything, but I almost did because I was so frustrated and I wanted to call somebody like a good friend and just vent just to get it off my chest. And I struggle with that because, like, a lot of the times now, because I'm doing all this work and thank God I'm so much better, but I like stuff it down. But it's like sometimes you want it, but thank God that person did not answer the phone.
But you have to understand, there's three people that are affected: the person who's talking, the person who's listening, and the person who's being talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person who's, you know, the monkeys, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. It's true, because it affects. If you call somebody and you're venting, you're affecting them.
Right.
And then you're also affecting the person that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because what's affecting? We want validation for what we feel, but what we feel is not positive. So to dump our negativity on somebody else doesn't make it any better for them or for you.
Right.
It just makes it worse for that third person.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
No, I can't think of anything that would be applicable exactly.
What about you? so we have to be careful. We don't have to, but we should be careful with our words, because our words can lead to negative things, and our words can lead to positive things. So, did you have anything positive that you said today to somebody?
I had the same person. I said, she's very passionate and really cares. She's a really good heart.
Okay. We have to. So, what a good thing would be is to find actual good things that she could do.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not to give her things that she could do, but think about the things that she's good at. And then even just say one thing about her that's good. Because then eventually you'll pull it out of her. Because the smart thing is, it's never about what we say or what we hear. When you're in a conversation with somebody, it's never about what I say. It's what I didn't say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about what you heard. It's about what you didn't hear. Because it's mostly the unspoken that we need to pay attention to, because our words come out automatically and we don't think about it. But if you sit for a minute and think, okay, what did I just say and why did I just say it? And if you can do that before you speak, that's even better. Why do I want to say this? Why is it so important for me to speak? Why is it so important for me to say my opinion? Why is it so important for me to defend myself? Because we do that all day long. And we have to think, why? Why are we doing this? Why are we defending ourselves? Do we feel that we're not being heard? Okay, but what about the other person? Are we listening to the other person? Are we actually hearing what they're saying? Because, you know, there's two sides to it. When somebody comes to talk to us and they say something that's hurtful, we can take it two ways. We can get hurt, or we can think, okay, where's this person coming from? Why are they saying it to me? Maybe it's not okay that they're saying it to me, but if you can isolate what they said and sort of detach yourself from yourself, from your emotions, and say, okay, why am I being told this? And look inside and say, okay, maybe there's a reason. Maybe there's the way they said it for sure wasn't okay. Maybe it wasn't their place to say it, but the words were said. So what am I doing with them? That's the flip side of it. Our responsibility, not to say negative words. There's no point in it. We obviously don't go around wanting to hurt people's feelings intentionally. But then there are things that we say that we don't realize. Like, I think you told me that you were at a dinner party with a whole bunch of girls, and they were like, you know, when girls get together, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, maybe we can stop.
Yeah, it was
a forest fire.
So that's where we need to be careful with our words. Okay, next thing. It talks about counting. So this reading also contains the description of the holidays. It talks about Passover and it talks about Shavuot. And it says that God commanded the people to celebrate. And it begins with the holiday of Passover, which is when the Israelites became a nation. And then the next holiday that is mentioned is Shavuot. But the other holidays, it says the date that the holiday should be celebrated on. But when it comes to Shavuot, there's no specific date that's mentioned. Instead, it says that we received the law of counting, because from the first night, the second night of Passover, from the first night of Passover until Shavuot, we count 49 days. So it says that on the 15th day of the counting, it should be Shavuot. I mean, the 50th day of the counting, it should be Shavuot. But it doesn't say what date it falls on. And because the counting of the Omer, it's called, is more the bridge between Passover and Shavuot. And it actually helps these two holidays kind of complete each other. Because on Passover, the Creator was revealed to the Israelites. But what happened was that they couldn't grasp it. They couldn't internalize it. Passover was when they left Egypt, right? So they had just left the consciousness of Egypt. But what happened was they couldn't get Egypt out of themselves. They physically left Egypt. They physically went out of slavery, but they couldn't get that slavery out of themselves. So they weren't ready yet to be able to internalize the power and the revelation of the Creator. So those 49 days was the time that they actually had to cleanse themselves, to get rid of all their negativities, because we spoke on Passover about getting rid of our addictions, going out of our slavery. So these days that we're in now are days that we can cleanse our addictions, cleanse our negativity. We can build ourselves to the point where we get to Shavuot and we can be open to receiving all of those gifts that are waiting for us. But because the Israelites weren't ready on Passover, they had to go through the 49 dimensions of getting out of the slavery. So what, if you remember Passover, where were you in your consciousness on Passover? What was it that you wanted to get rid of? And where are you now? You know, we have how many? We have 3 weeks left, 2 weeks? June 9th, so like 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, something like that. Where were you then? Where are you now? And where do you want to get to? Take a minute and think. Where were you the night of Passover when we spoke about getting out of our addictions and breaking out of slavery? And what was your goal? What's your goal to be in Shavuot and after the 49 days? And where are you now? Whoever wants to share can share. Go ahead.
Letting go of the past, people, situations, things that would like weigh on my mind, mm-hmm. or I would like relive it over and over again. It was like kind of like distracting me or blocking me from my higher purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity to get away for a little while, which was great. And for me, that was like really helped give me a better perspective on things. So I feel like I'm much better, like where I'm not ruminating on the same stuff as much.
Okay, good.
New things.
Good.
But I know that I'm making progress. Like I don't have as much of an attachment to whatever happened, where it's just like it happened, it's over, I'm moving on.
Good. And what's your goal? Like where do you want to be?
To like completely so it's not like in my mind at all. Like, so I don't, it doesn't like creep in there, so it will try to creep in there a little bit. And so it's about for me like making new memories, having new wonderful experiences and focusing on the positive things instead of recycling back to the past. So the more positive things that I can bring in, the more I'll be focusing on all those good things.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Michelle, do you have anything? Mm-hmm.
It is a little similar to yours, so like complete surrender and like certainty in what's going to happen. So, of course, that's what you choose and then all the tests. So a lot of things kind of didn't go my way the past few weeks, and I think I handled it a lot different than I would have. I mean, I would get frustrated or like upset, but then like, it's not for me. Like, I'm asking for it, so I'm going to surrender. So I think things have been a lot easier. It's so refreshing to not kind of hold on to a certain way of things happening. So.
Right. Good.
Mm-hmm. So for me, it's actually something that I was building up to before Passover. And I looked at it from the standpoint of the actual 3 weekends. Passover, first weekend, second weekend, and then me being away the third weekend. And there was an opportunity for me to break away from a situation I got myself into that I knew that it could not exist. It could not go forward from where it was. And it was not, I would say, healthy for me. It was not conducive for me to get to where I wanted to go, which is have a much more clean, involved relationship actually within the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been interesting because just by virtue of the fact that I was gone those 3 weekends in a row, that created the break, but that didn't necessarily stop the internal conversation from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And literally within the last day or two, it came to a much stronger head, which makes it fairly clear that, you know, this is out the door. And this is, you know, so it's been a process, and my goal is to be completely absolved.
I understand.
Rid of
mm-hmm.
all of the elements associated with that and the way of thinking, way of looking at things by Shavuot.
Nice.
If I could do that, that would be great.
Okay. Do you want to share something?
Sure.
Okay.
I have a hard time letting go. So during Passover, I said, give me the strength, let me try to let go of things, let me get rid of the anxieties and the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like slowly but slowly I've been letting things go.
Good.
And I have more clarity and asking for more clarity.
Good. So for me, it's always like the little physical things that affect me. And you don't know me that long, but for people who know me, so my kids have been begging for dogs since they were 5. So the last 2 months, it became like more and more. And I always said to them, I'm not taking care of a dog. I have 3 kids. I'm not taking care of a dog. So I kind of waited until they were all old enough. And I'm allergic. Like, I'm highly allergic to anything that moves on 4, even birds. And we decided to get a dog. And we brought the dog home on Thursday. So Thursday morning, I took an allergy pill. And Friday morning, I took an allergy pill. And since Shabbat, I haven't taken an allergy pill. And nothing, 2 days. And it was just like a switch in my mind, I guess. I don't know. And I was around other dogs, but I haven't been in a house around other dogs yet, so I don't know. But it's just really weird. I have a dog that sheds. Like, I have hair all over me, and it's nothing. So either this dog is in a reincarnation of a tzaddik. We got him from a rescue, and the lady said, you know, it's going to take, you've got to buy a box of wee-wee pads, and it's going to take time. The first night the dog was home, nothing. Like, he was trained. And he wasn't trained, but he was trained. It was very interesting. So I think that it really is in our mind what our goals are. And whatever happens in between that takes us off of that path is not important. If there's something that's happening that's not either helping you, or even if it's bothering you, it's still part of it. But if it's not connected to what you want to do, it's not important. And don't let yourself go there, because we get sidetracked all the time with things that are not important. They're not important. Is this part of your goal? Is it going to help you, or is it going to teach you something, or is it a challenge? If it has nothing to do with it, let it go. Like, what's your goal? Is your goal to get married? If your goal is to get married, nothing else is important. So obviously you have to date, right? And you have to meet people. But don't get wrapped up in where I'm going, or, you know, if they said the right thing or not, because that's not going to help you. What's going to help you is, what's my goal? What am I willing to do for it? Because if I don't change and if I don't let go of something, nothing is going to change. It's just going to stay the same. And what do I really want? And why do I want it? Do I want it because I don't want to be by myself? Or do I want it because I want to be with someone? And why do I want to be with someone? Do I want to be with someone because I don't want to be alone? Or do I want to be with someone so that I can together make a difference? Because those are questions that you need to ask. Do I want to be with someone because I want to be alone is not a reason. Because what's going to happen is you're going to be with someone and you're going to be miserable. And you're going to be stuck with a person just because you don't want to be alone. You have to be careful what you say and what you wish for, because that's exactly what you're going to get. So we have to think of what we want to get rid of, what are our addictions, what we want to let go of, and what our goal is. And in between, it has to be just what that process is. And whatever helps us or makes us grow or challenge us in that process is important. Everything else, not important. Get it out of the way, because it's the power of words, power of our words, that can either go against us or help us. You know, like Eliyahu's daily affirmation book. If you say something to yourself every day positive, eventually you will get there. If you say to yourself something negative every day, you're not going to get anywhere. It's going to work the opposite. It's going to hurt you. Same thing of what we say with other people. If you say something good about someone, eventually they will become good. If you say something bad about somebody, eventually that bad will come out. So there could be someone that we think we know, that maybe we've known for years, and we keep saying negative things about them. Eventually, that's who they're going to become. Because even if they have the slightest chance of changing, and it's, you know, not people that we don't know, but people that are close to us, that are in our circle, even if they have a chance of changing, but we don't, it's not a matter of even believing in them. You don't have to love them or believe in them, or just not to say negative things about them, because it doesn't help them. Even if they're not there, mostly when they're not there, not to say negative things about them. Okay, the next part is connected to the sacrifices. So in the history of the Jewish people, there were three stages in how sacrifices were brought to the temples. The first one was called Bama, which is a platform. And during this time, any individual could bring a sacrifice whenever he wanted. And this person didn't have to be a high priest, because this portion talks about the high priest and all the jobs of the high priest. So the first level of sacrifices that they had was called Bamai, was a platform. And anybody could come whenever they wanted. They didn't have to be a high priest. And they could bring whatever they wanted. The second level was called the Mishkan, the tabernacle. And this is what was built in the desert, and this is what traveled with them wherever they went, and also went into Israel with them. And here, only the high priest could do the sacrifices, but if for some reason the tabernacle wasn't being used at a certain time, so a person could come and sacrifice whatever they wanted, only during the downtime, the time that the high priests weren't there. The last one was the temple, the holy temple, the Beit HaMikdash, and when that was built, individual sacrifices were completely forbidden, and there was a permanent altar, and it was only the job of the high priest to offer the sacrifices. So what does this mean for us, and what is it talking about? So the three stages correspond to the three aspects of the people. The first one is the intellect, the neshama. The second one is the animal soul, the nefesh. And the third one is the body. So the intellect, think about it. An individual is independent and everybody's different. And this corresponds to the first sacrifice, because no one person thinks like another. No one person acts like another. We all have our own opinions and we all have our own style and our own approaches. So the individual sacrifice enabled every person to basically elevate his own neshama, his own level of his soul, and connect to the Creator. And that's how they were able to draw down the holiness during that time. The second level, the Mishkan, was what we call the nefesh, which is the animal soul. And the tabernacle, on a physical level, was made of animal skin and wood, and that basically expressed life, and it expressed growth. And that's why it corresponded to the animal soul. which helps people, which enables us to grow. It helps us live and grow. And so that was something that was added. And the last level, which was the Holy Temple, and that corresponded to the body, was made mostly of stone. And that had the ability to elevate the body consciousness. So the physical is the most difficult part of the person to elevate, right? That's the hardest part, the physical part. But the sacrifices of the temple had the ability to elevate even the physical body. So basically, the task of the high priest was to bring unity between heaven and earth, between us and the Creator. And by offering the sacrifices and performing these services of the temple, the high priest was able to bring down the holiness and do a connection. And because his job was to create unity, he couldn't go near anything that was impure. So only in the temple itself, when they got to that level, could there be a complete union between the Creator and the people. Questions before we do a meditation? Questions about anything? Okay. So if you guys can uncross your legs, put everything down, we're going to do a meditation. Try not to fall asleep. It's going to be a little long. Close your eyes. And inhale and exhale 3 times. Now, I want you to start feeling every part of your body and start getting rid of the tension of the day, starting with your head and your ears, your eyes, your nose. Feel your mouth and your jaw loosening. Feel all the tension coming out. Your neck. You can move your neck around a little bit in a circle to feel all the tension loosening and getting out of the neck area. Your shoulders. You can feel the heaviness of your arms falling by your side and relaxing. Your fingers. You can feel your chest with every breath relaxing, releasing all the tension of the day. Getting all the negativity out and breathing in positivity and relaxation. You can feel it going down your inner organs, your stomach. Feel all that nervousness going out. Feel your hips, your legs, your knees. Feel it go down to your ankles, your feet, and your toes, and feel all that negative and heavy energy leaving you. And now I want you to imagine yourself in your safe place. If it's the ocean or the forest, if it's a river or a mountain, and imagine a home in that place. If it's built from wood, if it's stones, if it's a cabin, imagine what it looks like. You can open the door. When you go inside, you climb 3 steps. 1, 2, 3. And when you get to the top of the stairs, you see a big room. And imagine what that room looks like for you, the most comfortable room that you could think of. If there's a big chair or a big couch, whatever it is that you're sitting on, that's the most comfortable thing for you. And I want you to imagine a big screen in front of you. See the big white light on the screen, and take the time to feel your home that you built, the environment that you're in, and how safe and comfortable you feel. And slowly, slowly, I want you to see on the screen all of your addictions, all of your challenges. Don't be afraid to see them. Embrace them. Don't be ashamed, don't be embarrassed. And I want you to see all of the things that you know you want to let go of. You know that when we get to Shavuot, you want to be a new person. You want to be able to say goodbye to those addictions, to be able to break out of them. Slowly, slowly, one by one, I want you to take those challenges and those addictions, and in each situation that you're in, see how you could do it differently. See what you could say differently, what you could feel differently. How could you react differently? Take the time to internalize those feelings, those emotions, and see how you reacted differently and what it made you feel. Slowly, slowly, those situations are going on the screen and moving on. And you're able to see yourself changing those situations, changing those addictions. With your mind's eye, take a picture of what that looks like, how that feels. What the interactions are. Now I want you to be able to release those pictures from the screen. You can imagine big white light around them and sending them in a big ball of white light into the universe and letting go of it. And now I want you to become aware again of where you're sitting in that safe place in your home, in your room. And start being aware again of your body, of your feelings. You can feel your toes wiggling. You can feel your feet. You can feel the energy of a white light going through your legs, your knees, up to your hips, your stomach, your inner organs. You can start feeling your fingers again and your hands, your arms and your elbows. You start feeling your shoulders again, and your neck, and your head, and you feel all this white light energy surrounding you. And I want you to get up and walk over to the stairs, and you're going to take 3 steps down, 3, 2, 1, and you're going to open the door and go out into that safe place, if it's the ocean or the forest or the river, wherever you were. I want you to thank that place. Thank those emotions and thank yourself for being able to let go. I want you to take 3 deep breaths in and out. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Write it down if you experience anything. Take a couple of minutes, write it down, and then we can share if you want. That meditation is always very powerful with the screen that you're looking at yourself. Do you want to share? No? Do you?
I'm feeling that you've done this before. So my place is always going to be the beach. So it's the
mine too. That's fine.
It's Laguna Beach for me. That's like the best. So it's like a beautiful house and it's really like tall ceilings, almost like no ceilings. There's like lots of bright white light coming in, a lot of white or like cream color furniture, sofas, really comfortable, peaceful, and whatever those emotions were, like, was very clear within a matter of seconds. Like, I knew what they were and saw them on the screen, and then it was like easier than I thought to let go of them.
Good.
And then replace them with...
Were you able to see yourself replacing them?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's what's important.
Yeah. And then, like, they just, I sent them out and they were gone, and I felt really relaxed and peaceful and like excited to be there.
Good. That's good. Do you have anything, girls? No? Go ahead.
Mine was similar, where it was easy to release, and even though my reaction to certain things wouldn't be that bad, it served its purpose, but now I'm aware that there's always a better
That's response. Good. That's good. And were you able to see yourself changing that?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Good. Go ahead.
So for me, my safe place is Sakme.
Okay.
And I was busy trying to figure out what kind of a wooden structure would be over there, and, you know, hexagonal, and where the couch would be going, and where this large screen would be going. And then trying to put up stuff that I want to get rid of. And just trying to identify it. It wasn't straightforward, it wasn't
okay.
You know, immediate. But I was able to get a couple of things up over there, and then, you know, get rid of them and come back and replace them with a different approach, different act.
Were you able to see that? To
yeah.
Okay, good. That's
and
important.
You're just coming out, stepping down the steps, and walking outside, and, you know, softness full of water
mm-hmm.
and springs and stuff like that. So it was very nice. That's that.
Good.
I found the things that I wanted to get rid of, it's actually more difficult to keep them around. And like the behavior of letting it go, it's just easier not to engage.
Good.
So it was kind of refreshing.
That's good. So you were able to see the difference. Good. Good, that's important. If you guys can do, you know, you can use that meditation for anything. You can go up until the screen. And then you can use that for anything. You can put whatever you want on the screen. And just being able to imagine that, it's sort of like instead of writing, you have it in your mind's eye. And it's important to be able to visualize yourself being better and actually feel it and experience it. Because then you can manifest it. And that you can take that meditation, it's on the recording, and do it by yourselves. You know, just imagine your safe place, imagine your home, and it can be different every time. It doesn't have to be the same home every time, because you change also. So whatever you feel comfortable with, you take yourself to that place, and then it's sort of like a guided meditation on your own. You know what you're doing, you know where you're going, and then you see it on the screen, and whatever it is that you want, the intent that you want to set, you see it on the screen. You see it on that big white screen, and don't be embarrassed or feel bad to feel things that are not good, because you have to let them go. You have to be able to say, okay, this is who I am or who I was or who I don't want to be anymore, and accept that and then be able to let go of it. But the next step is important, to be able to see what you're replacing it with. Because just letting go and not knowing what you're replacing with it with is not going to help you. Now, there's a saying that addicts always stay addicts, but you have to replace the addiction with a positive addiction. So, you know, if there's a person who's a drug addict, they'll always be an addict, but better to replace that with something spiritual or something that is for the good, and let them be addicted to that than the drugs. Because it's almost impossible to not be an addict. But it's about what you want to be addicted to. And that's the important part. And it's the same thing as our consciousness of going out of Egypt. So it's going out of the slavery to the physicality, but what we chose instead of that was to be slaves to the Creator. And that's not a bad thing, because everyone is a slave to something. So what would you want to be a slave to? To your addictions and to physicality, or to the Creator so that you could have a better life and become like the Creator? Those are the things that we can choose all the time. What do we want to be addicted to? Because we're all addicted to something. So we can choose what we want to be addicted to. That's our free will. Our free will is to choose what we want to be addicted to. The Creator in positivity or the negativity? Yes?
I have a question. So what you're describing is taking traits.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at modifying those traits. Mm-hmm. What if instead of taking traits and modifying them,
mm-hmm.
I want to be able to use that screen to visualize an event that I'm looking to?
Definitely. Create. You can use it for anything.
Okay.
Like if you, whatever you're, let's say you want to create something. You have an event or you have a conference or you, what do you want to happen there? What do you want to manifest there? This meditation is good for anything. But the point is to be able to see on the screen where you want to get to. And you can actually build a whole event on the screen. You can build a whole conference on the screen. You can build your whole, whatever it is that you're going into on that screen and visualize it. And the most important thing is that when you open your eyes, write down what you saw. Because you're going to forget it. Within 5 minutes, you'll forget it. Promise. Because we don't, it's not in our conscious mind yet. It's in our subconscious mind. And once we visualize and once we write it down, we can manifest it. Because it's kind of tricking our mind, but it's tricking our mind for the good, because we trick our mind all the time. How do we get out of addictions? We trick our mind. It's really a matter of the mind. Any addictions is a matter of the mind. If it's eating, if it's drugs, if it's alcohol, if it's whatever it is. And, you know, I heard the weirdest thing today. We were talking to somebody, and they said that the federal government can take to court people who have too much marijuana, but not pills, like not LSD or things like that. It's not in their jurisdiction. They can't monetize it, I guess. It's really weird. It's like the weirdest thing. And it's sort of like, it's backwards, you know, where we don't know how to trick our mind into believing that we can do it without this. So if I don't have this, I need something else. So if I don't have the pills, I need a system. I need spirituality. I need something that will help me replace that. And then how strong am I and what am I willing to do to replace that? That's where it is everything that we talked about tonight. So the beginning was investing. You know, building, it talks about parent-children and investing in our children and teaching them and really planting a seed. But that can be for anything. We're planting the seed for what we want. What is the project that we have in our hands? What are we doing? And investing in it, because it's not just going to happen if I sit back and I'm going to have $7 million tomorrow just because I sat back and wished it. Not going to happen, right? And then the power of words. What am I saying? What am I saying to people around me? Why am I saying it? And we have a certain amount of words. It says, according to Kabbalah and the Sidra, there's a certain amount of words that a person is giving in this lifetime. And when you're done using them, you're done.
Wow.
Yeah. So think about that.
Wow.
Either you talk faster or you stop talking. Think about it. The power of words. And how many words are we wasting? How many words are we using for negative? How many words are we saying that we don't need to say?
Absolutely. That annoys me so much.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I struggle with. Because I like to communicate in concise.
Right.
And I appreciate what others do.
Right. And then the understanding of the 49, of the time that it took us, or it's taking us, to get out of our slavery. Because everything is there waiting for us. All those gifts are waiting for us. All we have to do is get out of our minds. It says that the only correction children have are their parents. we can't get in our own ways. You know, we get in our way. Everything is there waiting for us. We just have to get out of our own way.
Interesting with the 49, because that's 7 to the power of 7.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's the 49 traits, the 49 dimensions. What is it that we... Every day we're building something else. Any more questions?
I do have a question.
Yes.
And it kind of relates back to your story that you gave about the two men.
Yes.
So there's, there are different ways of raising kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and one of the ways of raising kids, more of a British way, if you want to call it that, is there's more of a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm typifying it, which may not be, it may be a little bit exaggerated, whereas the American way is more
not okay.
Which is more of, I'm going to give them whatever they ask for.
Which is definitely not okay.
Right. But there's a whole balance over there between the two, because the extremes of here, the extremes of here. And so how do you get to decide what that...
How do you get to decide? It's written in the Torah. You have to give boundaries. You're supposed to educate your children, because if you don't educate them, then they'll go off the path. So giving somebody, there's a difference between reinforcing someone and telling them what they should do instead of what they shouldn't do, and giving them everything. Yeah, I believe that you need to tell them. If you're going to say no all the time, then tell them what yes. Don't just say no. Say what's yes. And then, but giving them everything all at once.
Give them an opportunity to earn.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you, guys.